department, administration, media people are most welcome. The agenda before you, we have opening remarks, consideration and adoption of the committee program, deliberations of Paja and Paya rules, discussion on criminalization of racism, and closure. Is there anyone who wants to add something?
Can you take the agenda as consent? Thank you. Can we request the department to present on the rules, please?
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable committee members. Chairperson and members, my name is Raj Gaya. I'm with the Department of Justice, and I am from the Rules Board. To my left is my colleague, Lovisani David Necker. He is also from the Department of Justice and from the Rules Board. And we both were before this committee, Chairperson, in April sometime here, and it was at that meeting that we did a full presentation of the rules relating to Paja and Paya, and I've just made extra copies just to hand out for members to refresh their memories when they want to take a further look at the documentation. So we did the presentation. The questions were put to the team for clarification on various aspects, and I think the one issue that stood out was why the big delay. Honourable Swart did say that 2009 Rules Board went and presented these Paja and Paya rules. You now come to us in 2015. What happened in between? So we took the committee through that process, and we said that although the rules were gazetted, they were not promulgated to come into effect. The reason for that was members is that there had to be extensive training undertaken by judicial officers, court officials, because it's a new procedure that was to be introduced into the court space. Your Paja and Paya rules. So what we had is we've got the Act. We've got the Paja Act and the Paya Act. And for members to just understand the basic difference between the Paja and the Paya, the Paja deals with judicial review of decisions that have been taken by institutions. And then the Paya deals with you going and getting information from these institutions in arriving at these decisions. What is the information that was used to inform these institutions? So to a large extent, your Paja and Paya work together very closely. So you got the acts, and then in order for this to be given life, the rules had to be introduced. So 2009, you had them gazetted, but they were held back for enforcement because of the training. So that was the process where the department was training officials, getting them through the then Justice College, geared up to embrace these new provisions. Then what happened was in 2012, Lawyers for Human Rights brought a Constitutional Court case, and said that the rules that were gazetted were unconstitutional. And Chairperson members, the sum total of their objection was that you've got review processes within your current rules, your High Court and your Magistrates Court. Why are you not using those existing rules to deal with judicial review and bringing application for access to information? Why are you introducing a almost a parallel process through your rules? So the rules were declared to be unconstitutional. It went back to the drawing board, which is the rules board. We looked at the amendment. We looked at the criticism coming out of the judgment. We revamped the rules. We interacted with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. We tweaked it further, and then we now are back. After having sent it to the minister, say we are fine, we're happy with them, you can please sign it off, you send it off, and now we come back to the portfolio committees and we say, now these are the new revised rules, and we've taken heed of the criticism that came out of the judgment, and he said, what we've done, Chairperson and honorable members, is we've aligned the PAJA and the PAJA rules to fit in with your existing High Court and Magistrate Court rules dealing with review and applications. So we've done that, and so what you'll see in the documentation is that the new rules are very simplified, and they draw distinction to the existing rules that exist in your High Court and Ash Court rules, and it makes it much more easier for citizens to access the relief that they seek. That Chairperson would be where we are in terms of capturing the brief history. The documentation has got all the chronology of the events, and of course, if honourable members want to engage on specific aspects, Chair, gladly will take you through that. But we have covered in detail the background.
Thank you very much. This is the presentation, the summary presentation from the department. The work already done. Can I open for comments and maybe questions for Sarah Dante from members? I will recognize Honorable Schwartz.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Mr. Dyer. It's good to see you again. I'm not sure if we dealt with the issue last time, why the process went via the NCLP first. Maybe you can respond to that. And I know there's been just the further interaction with civil society. I think this is a crucial issue given the fact that it seems that only 30% of applications have been granted for access. And I think that those are court applications, but when one applies to departments, I think it drops to 13% going back to 2012. So it seems there is an issue here, and I welcome the tabling of these rules. I think they go a long way. I've been engaged with various academics on the issues as well, and their concerns seem to be allayed. You have, I think, discussed that as well previously. But it seems that the main issue is still the issue of whether when magistrates hear an application and they have the record before them, to what degree they give reasons for refusing the access, or how an applicant then that process. Alison Tilley from the Open Democratic Association for Society did raise that issue, and it might still be something. Are you satisfied from the department's perspective that that issue, which appears the judges and magistrates find it the most tricky, how you deal with the applicant is applying for access to a document, the magistrate might sit with the document, but he can't show it to the applicant to substantiate the argument. Does the magistrate give reasons for refusal? Does that then help future applicants to build up case law on the issue? And obviously, the one way of doing it is for the judicial office to look at the record and decide not only on the papers. So that seems to be an issue that is very difficult to deal with, and I'd appreciate the comments on that. But I do appreciate the fact that this has been a long way coming, that we from Parliament are also urging, not finalizing. I think it was tabled in December last year, wasn't it? So, but thank you for your input from your side.
Thank you, Mr. Dai. Any further comments? Honourable Bongo?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. On my end, I think it is reinterpreted to what Colonel Osman has said. But what I want to find out in the main around the issue of the buyer. So I know for a fact that there is a prescribed form that one must comply with if you want the information. But the technicality is, the legislation says that, let's say in an interview session, I recognize that I want to know why I'm not shortlisted. So legislation prescribes that I'm only limited to the information that relates to me. And from where I'm sitting, it disadvantages me. Because the information that would be given to me would not necessarily be put me in a position of determining whether, out of all the candidates, I am the relevant one. So I just want you to comment around that, because I think if they say you must get the information that relates to you as a candidate, vis-a-vis the right of the other people not to have their information published or their information given to other private individuals. So how do you reconcile the two? Because it ends up being I'll be like multiplying my own efforts by zero. If I request the information, they only give me the information that relates to me. When I want the information that relates to everyone, so that I can determine my next course of action. I don't know whether you understand. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Bungo. Any other responses from the department?
Thanks, Honourable Members. Good morning. On the issue of why the rules, the Pajar rules came before the NCOP committee first. Honourable Members, the rules, once they are finalized, we give them to the minister to table them in Parliament. So we do not have the control mails as to, like, we just wait after they've been tabled to Parliament by minister, we await invitations from the House of Parliament. So that is something, the process that is not really under our own control. So when we are called in by the NCOP committee, we hit a call and came and did the presentations. We didn't question the process. We just hit the call. But ours is just to we depend on what the two houses, how do they operate. So it's something that is outside of our own control. Okay, maybe just to also deal with the aspect of Honorable Bongo's question around the, like, when the requester is not supplied with proper information. This is where the prior rules kick in. That's where the, if I do understand your question properly, Honorable Bongo, if someone is not satisfied with the information that is maybe prescribed as form, but you still feel that there's some inadequacy in the information provided, that's where then the prior rules now are kick in. The way these ones are designed, they are designed in such a way that you can either follow the normal rules of the magistrate court, which is will be rules 55, or the high court rules. It depends on which forum you want to litigate in. And then if you feel that there's some kind of a delay, or there's some kind of a denial of information that you need, that's all. that's when the rules are allowed done to take care of that process.
If I can just add an explanation, generally from the questions, the concern is, what if it isn't compliance? What's the relief? Because you've got the new rules, and members are saying there is some concern and criticism as to whether the rules are exhaustive enough in order for the information that's been requested to be released, and in the event that that does not happen, what is the relief that applicants have? So by tagging both the rules to the existing rules of the High Court and the Magistrates Court, it then says to the applicants, you can use the existing framework to compel the institution to release information. So if you believe that any information that you have requested in terms of these rules have not been forthcoming, it's then your right to bring in the necessary application based on the current rules, whether it's in the High Court or the Mass Court. So the issue of the forms that were previously contained will all disappear once these rules come into operation. The forms that were designed were merely guidelines. And what current rules do is simply says that you will bring application in terms of the relevant High Court and the Magistrates Court rules for access to information or for decisions made by a particular institution. You don't have to stick to any of the old forms that were gazetted, because those were extremely, they were restrictive in terms of what people would use. And the impression that was created was you just simply need to comply with the response to that form. But the rules are now saying that you can go as wide as possible in terms of what you are applying for in terms of decisions. So I don't know, honorable members, whether the sense from the members are that you need to really have an exhaustive form that will cater for each and every situation. I think what the rules refer to do is it says to applicants, use the current mechanism and bring your applications in terms of the existing court rules so that you don't have a dual process that is being created and a separate process that is created. And insofar as the issue of whether the information that is submitted and you believe that it is not fully, the information is not fully disclosed, then within the framework of the rules, the remedy would be for you to apply compliance if you believe that information has not been fully disclosed. Because in your decision that has been made by an institution, that institution uses documentation to arrive at that decision. And that's why we say that for PAIA, your access to information in arriving at the decisions is almost done concurrently and at the same time, so that you get the information that informed the institution in the decision that it had made. So that would be the response, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Zaya. I have a follow-up question from another
issue. The issue that I raised about the magistrate dealing with the application and that difficulty. Because it's a difficult issue for the rules to cover extensively. But maybe you could just advise me kind of to that, to the interrelation, because this was an issue that was brought up by the prior criminal society as a concern subsequent to the briefing that we have got. So it seems that it's not an issue that you covered. How magistration and judicial officer deal with this? That's the tricky issue, because you've got applicants, you've got the judicial officer fits with the record, obviously you can't give it to the applicant, but the applicant needs to argue for access. So there are various approaches. Some allow respondents to offer spot the application, but have you basically left out the judicial officers? And then to form what one would like to see case law developing, where applicants can argue on the basis of, as opposed to just a blank refusal on case law, to say, well, in bigger cases, this has been enough. Because often it is a fishing expedition to get information necessary, because the department refuses to give the information. You're not sure exactly what information, so it's broadly drafted, which is very good. But is that something that is possibly able to help? Maybe that means just the conversation.
Chairperson, the rules cannot be definitive in terms of how it will deal with what the circumstance will dictate. The other area that is difficult when it comes to rulemaking is for the discretion of the court to be in any way in which the court interprets the regulation. And I know that from practice, what we're developing is practice data. So I think that the issue from Swan raises is relevant. And I would imagine what could possibly happen, because there is ongoing training for the judicial officers. I think a request can be made, one, to the Magistrates Court Commission, that there should be practice directives issued to all judicial officers in the lower courts with regard to the manner in which they deal with the release of information in terms of this request. Second, request could be directed to the Office of the Chief Justice, and as members know, that there are various practice directives that are issued in all divisions that deal with the way in which judicial officers are guided with regard to the interpretation of certain rules. So I believe that the possible gap that Honorable Swart refers to, whilst the rules cannot be absolutely restrictive in the way in which judicial officers interpret them, it could be cured if one proceeds on that basis, and I think that can be achieved. Of course, jurisprudence will be developing with all new rules that are introduced into the space. So you will get rules being tested insofar as their constitutionality is concerned, and there is nothing that hinders amendments of rules as rules are put into the rulemaking process. So that would be my response, Chairperson, with regard to the issue of whether the magistrates are going to be interpreting the rules and the applications in a way in which there is some sort of uniformity. So that would be the way I would approach that. The second issue relating to, has there been sufficient consultation with civil society? Now, the difficulty with consultation with civil society, short of having to send it to the list of role players that we have, that we send out all new rules for comments, and part of the role players include lists of certain civil society institutions. So we have that, like the broad-based community-based civil society organizations under NatGeo is part of the list that we communicate with. Unfortunately, there isn't a definitive way in which we can tick that box and say that, yes, we believe that we have consulted extensively with each and every rule. I am certain that there has to be a better way that it is done, but the consultation process is something that is not something that we have
full control over on those ones. And if it is that the concern is, but do people really know about it? Has there been sufficient consultation? And there has to be a partnership between Parliament as an institution and the publicizing of the availability of this mechanism. So should the department perhaps be called upon to publicize the rules and how this relief is available?
Yes,
I'm sure that this must be part of what has to be done insofar as that is concerned. Mr. Nicker?
Thank you. Just to add on that, Honorable Sir, we tried our ever best to consult with as much of the wide variety of organizations as possible. To the extent that we were the first submissions made, and then after that we worked on the rules again, especially the prior rules, where we worked again after a receipt of consultations from different organizations. For instance, the very same civil, the higher society network did they made submissions together with the South African History Archives, and then they were represented by a lady called Catherine Johnson, the secretary. They made extensive submissions which we did take into account. There were submissions also from the Law Society of South Africa. We received submissions from the Legislative Development of the Department of Justice, as well as the Cape Law Council, which instructed counsel to make representations on their behalf. And then all of those comments were taken into consideration when fine-tuning the prior rules. And the same process was also followed with the prior rules. So there were different invitations sent to different stakeholders, right? Like both civil society organizations, lawyers, organizations, even the judges and the magistrates. And then with the prior rules, we received representations mainly from the judge, I think the judge Anton Landman, and then Judge Prisel of the High Court. Our submissions are a little bit. We try to be as diversified as possible, especially because we aim that the users of the rules must be the ones that give us the way forward to their submissions, so that we can fine tune them to the best of our ability and to take into consideration their concerns. As to the other questions around when if a magistrate is deemed not to be supplying all the necessary information, for instance, both now the PADA and the PAIA rules are designed in such a way that they can be now brought in terms of the relevant rules of court. Like in the High Court, it's both Rule 53 and Rule 6, and in the magistrate court, it's Rule 55. So it follows from that process. If, for instance, it's a magistrate is seen not to be complying fully with the request. In terms of the rule, it can be that kind of a decision can still be taken on review, on fair review. An application can be brought forward wherever the decision of that magistrate can be taken on review. Thanks.
Honourable Mutafo, can you follow that, Honourable Bongo?
May I kind of make a follow-up on this consultation issue? May I get clarity? Because it appears, according to the presentation by
Mr.
These are, according to what I heard just now, are meant for users of this rule. Did I get you clearly? It appears the consultation was limited to judicial officers. No, I'm going to continue. because the even can just attack. On the civil society, you mentioned the what network, broad-based civil society, you mentioned a certain social network, a certain group, and the web network, society network, the law society of South Africa and so forth. The masses, let's say I come from a deep rural area, where they're not supposed maybe to know about what is happening here. People from Tagoni, people from Silitenga, Kashele, and so forth. Are we confining this only to the users of the rules? That's the question, Chairman.
Honorable Bongo, to be followed by Honorable Makeha.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. You see, this, the Paja, emanate as a result of the constitution. The main reason why we also have this is through maybe the intention of the legislature was to bring closer the law to the ordinary people on the ground. But it's quite those who cannot litigate, because litigation is very expensive. Now you have these rules, they are being revised, and I earlier spoke about the prescribed form. What happens to that? Because this is mainly to assist people who are on the ground, like Honorable Mutapa is saying, the ordinary people on the ground who are not satisfied about decisions taken by authorities when they seek information. So now it's like, from where I'm sitting, it's like we're looking at it from the perspective of assisting those who are already having access, particularly the High Court and so on. So and why are we not even, because magistrate court exists almost everywhere, why do we create two jurisdictions? Because you see, I think everything that we do, the rules, must respond to the intention of the legislature in terms of ensuring that those on the ground are able to get information quicker and better, and they're able to be better assisted. So I think I just want to clarify your view on that particular aspect. But one aspect that I'm not clarifying is the issue of Uti. If a person doesn't have the right to get my information, how do you reconcile that with the one who wants the information? And to an extent that if he does not get that information, he may not make a view on whether he has to take the next course of action or not. So how do the reconciliation, how does this rule improve that particular situation? And how do we make sure that we entrain them, take them to where they must be, particularly the ordinary people that understand the intention of the legislature around this two legislation? Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, just to follow up on what Honorable Thabo and Honorable Bongo are saying, one sometimes gets the impression that we are reforming, not transforming. And our reform process is really to empower the privileged to access justice. And that, as Mutapo also observed, is revealed by the type of consultations that we make. We consult the city-based people. Sometimes we consult ourselves on how we can best use the system. So our work doesn't seem to be inclusive of the majority of the people, especially in the rural areas, who have been on the receiving end of the apartheid policies of the past. So one can say that actually what we have is reform, not transformation. and these reforms are Eurocentric, not African-centric, but the majority of the people are Africans. Now the question is this legal system serving the people of South Africa as a whole, especially the majority? And my view is that it is really not, and we are perpetuating a concept of two nations in one, and everything in these two nations, the Western center and the African center, and everything is done to benefit the Western centered nation. And this is really unfortunate. So maybe we need to find out who originates some of these ideas and proposals in the department. Is it politically driven, or is everything driven by officials in the department?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think out of all the inputs that have actually been made, it's quite clear that we require a rush. But also, I think concerns around, like Honorable Bongo has indicated, limited access to information. Honorable Schwab has indicated what you do, cut blank requests for information, all of that, and just interpretation and uniformity of application of rules is what needs to be considered, because it's all about access to justice. And it does actually much work for the people of South Africa. And when we say people of South Africa, we mean like all people of South Africa, is articulated by Honorable Motapo. So basically, what it means is that we are thinking that we are done with the rules. Mr. Nneke has actually indicated that it's possible to fine-tune these rules, just in case, as we proceed to them, we find that along the way that there's more that needs to be done, which means that there's a lot of monitoring that requires to be made moving forward, so that we can be in the position to benefit from this process that we're actually putting forward, that we're thinking is going to work for South Africans. And with South Africa, everything is about law. I think we should be done properly. I'm sure you realize how we believe in the court of law in South Africa. We have the time in court, and therefore we shouldn't have something that actually make it difficult for people to access justice. Whatever instrument is developed should be such that it will actually help to solve whatever issues or problems that South Africans are experiencing, so that we can actually be in the position to tell ourselves at the end of the day that there is space in terms of whatever we are doing together as South Africans. But you know, I'm saying also curious with the money is how are you going to be applying Baja and Firewood when it relates to other pieces of legislation like the Protection of Personal Information Act? So that one actually protects providing information about companies and individuals who are coming to do business in South Africa. Do you apply your mind to it, or sometimes we write too much silos? That one is running parallel with this one, and it's things that we need to look at. So what it means is that as a committee, we have expressed the concerns. Indeed, we acknowledge the fact that the rules were put together by 2009. They were supposed to be in effect by December 2009, and we're already in 2016. So then therefore means that we need to continue, but at the same time they need to be monitored so that we can be in a position to refine them. Do you want to make any questions?
I'm not sure, but with the observations that have been made, apparent inadequacy of consultations, especially consultations with the majority of the people, and the fact that we were able to make from 2009 to 2016, what makes it so extremely urgent that we should be rushing to adopt this rule despite the weaknesses that we identified? Shouldn't we take this opportunity to really make good what we think is not right? Otherwise, we go back accept them, and then another court comes and say, no, there were no sufficient consultations. So then we are back to square one. And we stand accused already of making insufficient consultations and passing some legislation which is defective. I don't know. I'm just wondering, what makes this matter extremely urgent now, if it could wait from 2009? And there are matters which we said are urgent during this term of parliament, which are not being attended to by the department. And then we go and dig out ghosts from 2009 and try to make them urgent now. I'm wondering about that.
Let's give the department and the rules board an opportunity to respond to what has been set up to now, and then we'll give another round of
follow-up.
Okay, go on another part.
The court has declared the rules unconstitutional, so at the moment there aren't rules, so that does make it very important to deal with the issue now. The court already in 2012 declared the certain provisions of the statute were unconstitutional. So I think that does blend, when we talk about access to justice, that at the moment, actually, I think that's a very important consideration. I've looked at the rules. I think that the main issue is not so much the doctrine. They've been improved dramatically on the long term. I think it's informed the public broader outside about the new application of these vastly improved rules. I think that is something that we can encourage the department to do, is to then educate and have notices up with magistrates' courts. Here is an improved rule. I think that they've been improved significantly. But that is just my observation, Chair. It might be helpful to consider that. Thank you.
Thank you, Oliver Schwartz. I think one thing that is important is to also just the lens on what was regarded as unconstitutional. I know part of it was review institutions, and I thought that was addressed, but if you can help us to, in your response, the lens on what was regarded as unconstitutional and how you have actually responded to it.
I think this also raises the question whether we think higher PASA and the rules made are such that we can educate our people by putting notices at magistrate court. Does that reach the people? Is that enough? Who goes to the magistrate court to read the notices, except the people that are affected? I think there's something that we really don't do properly, because there has to be an educational program in the department to go to the people, use the media, and educate the people. We have, as the department, we are supporting Foundation for Human Rights. Who are they educating? Where? Because research showed that less than 40% of the people know about this constitution, that it provides, how they can use it. And this is well known to all of us, but we continue as if things are normal. And that means that we don't take our people seriously. As long as we are seen to be working, we are employed, and the courts are running, I think the department really has to change the approach. The reason there is a Foundation for Human Rights is because the department must utilize that institution and its resources to educate people about the constitution and the laws that we pass, unless we pass these laws for ourselves.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can you get a response from the department and
Chairperson and members, I believe that they are extremely pertinent issues that members have raised. The areas of concern that honourable members have raised that would be impossible for the Rules Board to be in a position to properly present a solution. My reading of the various issues that have been raised is that it requires an interrogation by the department and the Rules Board, and for there to be a response that must be submitted to this committee for it to consider, so that we are on the same page in wanting to move forward. So you've got an issue of community awareness relating to these kind of rules. Has there been enough done? No. We can't say yes, because the answer is no. So how do you cure that? Honorable Jefferson is saying, you've got a partnership with the Foundation for Human Rights. Go meet them. Find out how you can do a partnership process out of your partnership with them. Find out how you can go and educate the communities, and let us come back with regard to that process. So we're flagging that. The issue relating to the issues of making the process very much more simpler. Now we know that if the rules are accepted, the previous rules and forms fall away. But the question we need to ask ourselves is that if the forms fall away, does it make the current process simpler for the citizens? And is that an area that may be wanting in terms of where we are saying the court case said that what you are creating is a dual process, use the existing court rules. So if you do away with the forms, does it make it easier or more difficult for people to understand the access and the relief that they're seeking? I think we need to respond with regards to that. With regards to how we deal with the judiciary and how that information comes through, and whether what I had alluded to insofar as practice directors are concerned, what the department then must engage the judiciary and come back with a response. I think the homework to be done. And where I'm taking the chairperson is I agree. I agree with the concerns that have been raised. There are gaps that currently exist, and we need to close those gaps. So the department must go back. It must look at all of the issues that the committee has raised. It must send a formal response to this committee and indicate how it intends to close those gaps. The committee will consider a response, and it deems that we must come back and interrogate that process, then so be it. But clearly, what is coming out of the responses from the members is that by simply ticking the box of accepting the rules, that it take us forward to where we want to go, and there are various gaps that have been identified, and the rule board is not in the position to say to you that those gaps have been closed.
I'm happy with what you are saying, but usually we are told that the department will go back and do this and this. And unless you attach time frames, then in 1996, we'll be still dealing with the same thing like we're dealing with the work of 2009 in 2016. So can we really ensure that there are time frames? But just to also add again on education, we have advice centers in all the townships and rural areas. As I speak now, they are preparing to go to Scotland to learn how a paralegal legislation has been put together. And South Africa has sufficient knowledge and skills to develop that. Why are these things not happening? Because if we had a viable advice center network, we would be able to easily educate our people about these laws. And why is the department taking ages just to complete a paralegal act? And after all, the lawmakers are us, not the department. Why don't you bring this bill to us so that we can do our own work? So I think we're being let down, because by next year, everybody's going to be focusing on 2019 elections. So all these people are going to wait for 2019. So I think now, going forward, we must have time frames for everything that we are doing.
Thank you, Honorable Musa. I think maybe just to add to say that maybe we need the report, which is an outcome of this meeting, that actually indicates what is incidental, what not really to be adopted, if there isn't, and indicated by such and such a date, this will have been looked at. Okay, see your hand, Mr. Nagy.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe, Chairperson, before the committee may decide on the issues, I just wanted to because some of the factors that you raised here, for instance, the open issues of consultation. When you say rules of use of the rules, you don't only confine that to magistrates or lawyers, but everyone who's affected by the rules, who want to use these rules, and who wants to enforce the constitution. We try as much as possible to consult. Yeah, sometimes we don't have all those resources like to do road shows and stuff like that, but we send invitations to as much organization as possible. But at times we find that only a few respond, some don't. And maybe if I may say something about the rules, the ones that have been refined, like all the Paja and the Paya rules, have now been refined because we noticed that the previous rules contained a lot, for instance, of they were a bit complicated by normative. We tried as much as we can to simplify the process so that even an ordinary lay person who's not like really qualified can follow the rules. And then we were trying in this instance to try to do away with a lot of forms that may confuse people and stuff like that. And so that then we just channel everything to, if they are using the magistrate court, you follow the magistrate court rules and the forms which are there. And then also the high court process, you follow the high court process rules and then the forms that are there. They've been designed in such a way to try to be as simple as possible. One of the things that that was challenged with the Paja rules, one aspect that was deemed to be unconstitutional was the initial rules denied someone to be finished with a record of a decision that was made by an administrator before making a proper application. So these rules, the ones that are done in such a way that you can either request the record if you want to, but if you find that you've got a sufficient record, you can just proceed with the application. You don't have to delay the process. If the rules are delayed, because there's been an inordinate delay, for instance, with the Paja rules. Because we had to wait for the court process, we had to also wait for the designation of courts and the magistrates and the training of clerks before the rules could be a date could be affixed by the minister could now say these rules can come into operation. So as it is, these rules are not in operation. And now, if there are more delays, what is happening? There is the Paja rule, the act. Now also on the issue of education, what it does, it also makes room for a code of conduct to be done, whereby it will be that code of conduct, it's going to be called the Paja code of conduct. It will educate ordinary people on the usage of the of Paja, the rules, and all other things that are related to Paja. So now, we've been receiving requests from different sectors in the department for just saying, where are you, what is the process of the panels? Because we are waiting for you guys to finish with the rules so that we can include this rules in the Paja code of conduct, so that we can now use that code of conduct to educate members of the public as to how are these going to be used, the relevant section of Paja, and the rules itself, themselves, how are they going to be used and stuff like that. So what I'm trying to say is this. We, from the rules make point of view. We just make the rules. But in the department itself, the other sectors that have to now look at the process of educating people. That, for instance, the rules that are made did not come into operation immediately after being adopted by Parliament. But for instance, it's because that can be done to say, look, before these rules are coming into operation, we need a report to say, have the users, the internal users of the rules been educated enough to say, this is how are these rules plus the PIA itself is going to work and the relevant aspects of the PIA and stuff like that. But that one is done by other sectors of our department, not by us. Our is to try to make as simple rules as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Nake. I think you've made your point. I'm going to recognize Honorable Horn, Honorable Rickenbach, Honorable Bongo.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm just surprised that maybe as a committee we are conflating two of our different roles and responsibilities in our reaction to these things. Because on the one hand we are the lawmakers, and we all know that on the other hand we have an oversight function over the actions of the executive and the administration. And it would just seem to me that in saying to the department that we don't like what you're presenting in respect of these rules, because from experience we know that ultimately ordinary people out there are not knowledgeable about this and their rights. And therefore we are of the opinion that maybe you should go back and first educate them and then you can look at the rules. We just seem that we are using our powers of oversight to actually put ourselves in a position where we don't want to make the law. So my plea is just that we should separate the two. If we say as lawmakers there must be a proper process of public participation before we can make the laws, then that's all well and fine. And we've heard what the department said in respect of they send out a wide variety of notices and invitations for comments on these rules, and sometimes they might even be frustrated in themselves by the lack of responses and input. But there's good case law which also says that unless the department from their side limits public participation, the output in respect of public participation cannot be deemed to be insufficient if they did not preclude people from engaging in the public participation. So I would say that based on the information we have in front of us, there's no way we can say A, public participation was not sufficient. And then, if we strictly look at our role as lawmakers, we are duty bound by the fact that the initial rule has been found to be unconstitutional to act. And then thereafter, we as part of our powers of oversight can demand from the department or the rule board or whoever come back to us and tell us as to what measures have been taken to educate and enable ordinary people out there to know their rights in terms of these pieces of legislation and the rules. So I think, to summarize, we will be abdicating our core responsibility in this regard, and that is being lawmakers, if we for matters on the periphery of this issue are not prepared to
Thank you,
Honorable. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I refer more deeply than Mr. Horn, but I'm covered by this.
Thank you, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Bongo.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think having listened to the presentation very carefully, I think I concede that
The letter was dealt with a long time ago, 2009 and now. But in view of the fact that these are the rules, it's not necessarily the main legislation itself, which main legislation we have already done. I have studied the rules, I have read them, and I think we, as a committee, we must just grant indulgence and approve these rules. And because rules are easy to deal with, but further does encourage the development to go on a serious public participation process going forward. Because from where I'm sitting, I'm just checking I've checked the rules and we can test them as they are being applicable. But we also, as the committee, I think through you, Chair, we may have to take public consultation just on the awareness of the rule. Because from where I read them, I think there is an element of this rule being progressive and assisting. But the only snag is that is the education part of it. But when you read them, the applicability has an element of progressiveness. They may assist in the main. So I was pleading with the committee that we grant indulgence and approve the rules as they are, and keep looking at the rules and make improvement as we go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Bungo. Honorable Swart, you reiterated the fact that the rules were found unconstitutional. And that's when I said the department aside put the lens on what was regarded as unconstitutional.
I've looked at the rules, that issues of unconstitutionality have been dealt with in the new rules. And I fully support that the exercise of oversight, that you can ensure that the department functions. Not only note-taking magistrate, that's just one example, radio, other areas about this. So we separate the issues, if you accept these rules, and then we exercise oversight to ensure that the public is notified and educated about the implications of the rules. That's a separate exercise which I would fully support. And maybe the department can come back to us and report on steps to improve the communication and marketing of these new rules. So that is what I would support as a proponent. Thank you.
When should the department come back?
Well, it depends.
After how long?
It depends how long they would need to maybe give us a program of what they intend doing to advertise it. That would probably be.
It's very clear sometimes when you talk about time frame to indicate after a year.
No, 2 weeks, maybe. Would that be long enough? Just a program, you don't have done it, but what you would do, or Mr. Dye can comment on that. But I agree with the Chair, Dr. Musetta, that you do need a timeline for the department to respond to the manner in which these rules that have now been accepted are going to be communicated to the broader section of public. Maybe if 2 weeks is too short, maybe. Actually, to give us a program of intention so that we can then exercise oversight over those implementations and the various bodies that sort. I think then you would be making real progress, Chairperson.
No, Chairperson, I haven't had anybody saying that we shouldn't approve the rules. But a discussion of this gives us an opportunity to say what we think is wrong in our style of work. Because, for instance, we are saying that the Constitutional Court has declared the rules unconstitutional. But this is not the only issue where the Constitutional Court has ruled. There are other matters that we get from the lawyers of Parliament, say, on such and such a day, the Constitutional Court said this was correct, but it is not being done. So that's why I agree with the Honourable Swart that we really need a program of the department to say this year, these are the things that we want to do. So that as a committee, we also get full warning so that we can plan our work and avoid a situation where you wake up and then the department is jumping things on you. So it disorganizes us. But basically, you know, the rule of law requires legal certainty. And we say ignorance of the law is no excuse, which means that We are assuming that the masses of the people know the law, because if they are caught having violated it, we will say ignorance of the law is no excuse. Therefore, communication and education becomes critical if we have to maintain the law. So I will say in 2 weeks come back, but I would personally say that we need a program with time frames so that we know where you are going, so that we are also able to plan what we should do by when. But lastly also to say, you cannot create structures as the department like the Foundation for Human Rights and allow to give them a broad mandate as to do what they please, because you create them to advance the policy of the government, the progress of the government. So you should be able to guide and say, as matters stand, the people don't know the constitution, the people don't know the laws that we pass. How can you assist to do these things? So, in short, I'm very clear, Chairperson. We must change the way in which we are working, so that our people as a whole have access to justice. We are members of parliament. We have parliamentary constituency offices. When we go there, it's an opportunity for us to educate the people about the laws. Why can't the department produce pamphlets or booklets that can be translated into the indigenous languages? Then we can assist you to communicate these things, to educate the public. So we are being disempowered as members of parliament as well. So please, let's agree to change the way we work and move forward together.
Thank you, Honorable Sir. What I hear from the committee is that we should interpret as the rules are, we will proceed with a process towards adoption. We will have to also, on the other hand, consult to be sure that we are adopting rules that do not violate the Constitution, addressing the unconstitutionality that has been expressed. And we need to have a program from the department that actually advise us as to what training will be taking place in the meantime, in terms of the concerns expressed around training. Also, what is being recommended to the department is that there should be oversight of application of rules, so that areas that are problematic are identified towards refinement of the rules. That's the summary of the discussion. I think we can do so on that short. Honorable Schwartz is moving for adoption. Honorable Pumlana is seconding. I thank you, members. The department has excused. Thank you.
We thank you, Honorable Members. Very
happy. So the department? Excuse the department. No, it's in terms of legislation and rules. Mm. The DG will come, we have a process. Different islands.
But they kept, this is a comment where they really get into, because this is the last thing we gave, but assignment to be taken. So they were giving another assignment. The synergy of going back to the main management process is here. Otherwise, we're talking to ourselves.
The department is including the
parliamentary. That's the main problem. Because when we talk about it, there has to be a holistic approach to the department. But if we're dealing with issues of the department, and we don't even know if the coordination of what is being done in the department.
So I think think we need to address that immediately.
We can have a 5 minute comfort break.
I think we're pointing on this too as a subject.
No, I'm too excited. Traditional courts, committee courts, which serve the majority of
all the people. So I thought that when we develop the program for the third term, we would ask our question, where are we in terms of the things that we set out to do? Because what we have been doing now is more reform of the laws of the past rather than transformation. And we don't talk about mainstreaming of indigenous African legal system. We don't talk about the introduction of indigenous African system into the curriculum of the universities. We don't talk about introduction of indigenous languages as compulsory subject and a requirement for completion of law degrees. We don't talk about training the judicial officers in indigenous African laws, because all the judges, most of them, have not studied any indigenous African law. How do they apply the law to the majority of the people if they cannot understand the sense of justice of these people? And then we have, for instance, this traditional courts bill, paralegal legislation. We have been told that in October last year, these bills will be before us. But even today, they are not before us. There's no indication as to when are these things coming. We have problems in the land claims court in terms of the composition of the presiding officers, the performance of that court itself. We have agreed, and Justice Mulambo even suggested that he has a proposal as to how we can help to unblock things there. There is no provision for a workshop where we can invite Justice Mulambo to do these things. And then the emphasis is more on small claims court rather than community courts. Our people in the rural areas don't borrow money from one another. They have stock sales. They circulate the money amongst themselves. Maybe there's also a problem that as researchers of the committee and the members of parliament, we don't listen to one another, because we would expect that the researchers would lift up all these things and put them into a program of the committee. The fact that all the things that we've been raising don't appear anywhere, it may also suggest that the researchers of the committee don't take seriously what we are saying, and instead we get new things that have nothing to do with what we've been saying, which means this committee exists to harvest what comes from the department. It has no initiative. So I want to suggest that it is high time now that we become legislators ourselves and not the rubber stamps for what the department wants to see. For instance, there has been a conference that dealt with the National Plan of Action Against Racism. And now there have been calls for criminalization of racism. Nothing comes, it's nothing on the agenda. Now we have a problem in schools, Pretoria Girls High, of racism. Now we are going to be forced to be fighting with small children about racism. Because if we are not educated those white children and their teachers about racism, how do we expect them not to be racist? So I think that society is even moving faster than us, and this simply has to change. And we talk about criminalization of racism, and then the department talks about hate speech. Is racism and hate speech the same thing, or hate speech just a manifestation, an aspect of racism? So I don't know what our researchers themselves are doing, because I think they should be lifting up issues so that we will commission further research or we organize workshops to deal with them. But this proposal here, to me, says that we have been wasting our time. There's nothing captured on transformation of the legal system. It's about reform of the legal system, not transformation. And I'll just say a few words.
Thank you.
thank you for the introductory remarks in terms of the agenda, because we have the agenda, the discussion on criminalization of racism. That should be in there. On the agenda, discussion on criminalization of racism. That's the under discussion from there. In the background, there will be issues of reform also. Consideration of what? Oh, adoption, okay, yes. I'm lost. Okay, great.
So, yeah, I'm just saying right now, I'm being bombarded with the media about the racism issues. I can't respond. How do I respond? Because I've been saying that these committees are aware of the problems of racism. These are the steps that we're taking to deal with it. But because we're not dealing with anything, we can't even respond to the media.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Can I acknowledge the
Of the problem. That need workshops, that need input. But I think it is unfair to just say to the researchers, we need to take the issues that need to be taken to the forefront. And I put up on the issue of racism, there is an item on the agenda here. We need to ask them, the minister or deputy minister to come and brief us where the traditional court is. We can't blame the researchers for that. So I think, Chair, this is a very short session of Parliament after the election. That's 4 or 5 weeks. Our primary job is legislation. We are dealing with the legislation, and if it is needed to address one or two of the issues that the chairperson has to, then we can meet on other days as well. But I think we need to take responsibility ourselves. I don't agree with everything the chairperson has said on all the issues, but I do appreciate the fact that he's raised it in the first place. We can't just make broad statements. For example, now on the issue of Pretoria, we've got legislation in place that deals with that. Whether it's efficient or not, that is the way we respond to it. It's an educational issue as well. So, Chair, we need to be very careful the way that we place blame on one particular issue, and that being the researchers. We need together to look at the program, to say our primary function is legislation, then we've got oversight, we've got questions as to, and maybe we will be in the first, when we have the medium-term budgetary review, we will have the DG, we'll have the minister here, and chairperson or Dr. Moshenka, you actually asked in the last presentation for a full program. I think you already alluded to the department bringing up a full program of what it intends so that we can understand and then we can engage. This program is for the next few weeks, which we know is a very short session, basically 3 weeks to the 20th of September. So thank you, Chairperson. That's my side. My
thank you, Honourable Horn.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with the Honourable Swart. And I want to repeat, I think, what I've said in a last meeting. I think we will always be faced with reacting to whatever transpires in the domain of the PC through the courts, through the executive, and we can't shy away from that and say that we don't want to deal with these matters, but we have our own agenda. Having said that, I think there must be space, and with that I agree with the chair, to also not only react to what is happening around us, but also to be proactive in making laws that uniquely suit our own circumstances as a people and a country. But we as a committee, I think, must cross that bridge to say that for us to effect that, we will have to then say to each other that we will have to start sitting on Fridays and make use of all of the committee does, because quite simply, our workload in reacting to what is happening out there, which is also our duty, is fully capacitated or taken up with what we have to do to react to what the courts do and the executives. If we want to take up the baton to be proactive, we will have to amend our own way of doing things. That's the only input I have in terms of our program and the way we operate here.
Another combo?
Thank you, Chair. I think I agree with the Chairperson. So see now we are mid-term in terms of the 5 years that was spent. And we can't want to sound like an old record. So repeating what we say every day. Since we arrived 2014, we've been saying almost one thing. One thing, repeating the same thing, as if we don't know what to say. We raised the matter on traditional culture. That matter was supposed to be dealt with, which was supposed to be part of the program. Not even this program, but a program, earlier program. Where is it? The last time we gave an instruction was a simple instruction that department, bring it here. Bring it to us so that we can take the public hearings ourselves. If it fails, it will fail from the side of Parliament. And that's not a resolution. Nothing is happening. And to an extent, we will have to blame ourselves, but we must blame every one of us, including the researchers. And every one of us must also take the blame. But there is an issue, again, here in the program. We spoke about cybercrime. And when the president was giving state of the nation address, he said before the end of this year, we would have done a legislation on cybercrime. But that does not seem to be prioritized by any one of us, including this program. And it's a problem. It's a very serious problem. But maybe what Honorable Juan is saying may also work, because we need to do this work. If it means we must do it, or we must go on Fridays, we really need to go on those Fridays so that we're able to do the real work that was here. But we spoke about paralegals. Now we're sounding like an old record, repeating same thing every day. Our comments to Mr. Chairperson and Mr. Bajet last meeting. Comments. It's the comments we made. The comments we're making today. It's like we're doing 10 steps forward and 11 backwards. So that is good. That I think that will create a problem. So this program, I think, must be properly amended to reflect what has been a highlight in what we're discussing in the committee. Like this issue of traditional court, it's a matter that we must discuss. It's a matter that we must feature before we close this short term. It must be somewhere there. It must be discussed. At least a discussion must take place. You see? So I know the chairperson is only saying blaming the researcher, not in a negative way, not in a positive way of saying we're one team, let everyone's spirit go up in terms of us having to do the work. Because if we were to blame everyone, even the department, we can blame all of us, but we need to maybe utilize the Fridays. But I'm not sure how we utilize the Fridays, because most of us are serving in the committee that sits on Friday. And it will appear that committee is going to be sitting all these Fridays between now and end of the year. But really, Chair, I think that is my main submission. So.
Thank you, Honorable Bongo. I think the idea of meeting on Friday has actually been officially been approved by the Office of the Chairperson. That this committee must meet on Fridays, realizing the backlog that we've got. So we really need to use the Fridays. So if we look at the Fridays, I've actually looked at the program, looked at how it will look like if we use Fridays. We are going to find ourselves really having additional things, I think something like 5 additional things to what has been put out here. Like the 19, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, on the program, and that has saved us 5 days. So we're going to have 5 additional days, including the Thursday of the last week. I don't know if there are local classes, because I can see in terms of the program, we have actually catered for the 22nd September, which is the Thursday. For other weeks, we have catered for the 22nd, for Thursday, maybe it's because of caucuses. Yeah. There's no plenary, there's no air. So we can do, we can do the whole day and do a lot of work. So we should just utilize the Friday, and then, we'll look at how we can come around this, because even the committee needs to sit on Friday, realizing the backlog that we've got, and especially because already approval has been given. So there is an expectation that we have enough time to do the mission to do the work. Honorable Gredenbach?
Thank you.
You'll be followed by Honorable Maida and then Honorable Mutha.
I think one other issue then, the research of poor assessment. We've lost many days. The committee came for many sessions before the election. With no explanation. And then we had the long consistency period, which is called a huge backlog. And we're the people who approved the program. So we can hardly now complain about the program sometimes. We approved it. If we want something done, then we must ask the researchers to do it. But I think that it's the state of blame there for our citizens. I want to agree with the astonishing leader and the model and Mr. Horn. We should put more, certainly funds. And if needs be, we can spend days in the country to be reduced. It's inconvenient, but that's just how it is. We really are not going to get to our work if you're not. We need to work on the trip. So naturally, if you're going to come to the city, let's do that today. I'll come to
Thank you, Honorable Beitenbach, Honorable Maidla.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm also in agreement to the fact that we must dedicate more time to our work. However, I also want to agree with the Chairperson, Honorable, that this program needs to be reworked. And it should include issues like the traditional culture and the paralegal. You see, this might be for the short term, but my worry is when you look at the end of this program, there's a postscript on it, which shows further work in the next term. And the issues that we are using are not captured. So if we don't make the point that they are captured now, they will just be in that fact that cannot be accepted. Thank you.
Honorable
Mutapo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me align myself with Honorable Maida, especially in relation to page 3. We have been deliberating on the issue, especially the food bill, traditional court bill, and legal bill. But when we check it through on the last page, nothing is mentioned of those. I think, Chairperson, it is high time that we should look into the resolution of our stretch then in Canada. And again, we know we have 3 critical legislations which we need attend to as a committee. And thirdly, address the imbalances which existed in the past in relation to our majority of our people who are black and who reside in rural areas, who are denied justice or access to justice. But by not addressing this issue, then we are perpetuating the non-accessibility. I know every time I speak, someone will whisper, but I don't care. Chairperson, I think it's high time that
you're protected.
Yeah, thank you so much. The department, hello, please take us seriously. Take us seriously. We want this issue which we raise. Honorable Mom is telling the truth, you know, and all record has got scratches. It will keep us upside down. Now and then. You see? Yes. So we must sound, especially
us who come from half mama, for one. We mustn't sound like an old record, upside down 20 times. You see, you know, in the older days, we just those LPs, just like that. So please, let us be progressive. But address a different situation in your hand as a committee. When we live here, our great grandchildren, what were they doing there? Perpetuating inequality this time. Our chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mutapo.
Secretary. Thank you. I just wanted to explain one or two things on the program of the pressure that we're having now is that we have got 3 bills before the committee, which we don't seem to be doing anything about. So we have the request that we should look at these bills and finalize them as soon as possible. And also we have got the issue of the Human Rights Commission that also we need to prioritize, given that September will be National Police Academy. And then with regards to some of the issues that the committee has been raising for some time, like the infrastructure of the bill, part of the problem is that the department is not tabling the bill. So from our side, all that we can do, if we schedule a meeting, then I don't know, maybe it will be a progress report at the department, but I don't know how many progress reports we are going to get because they don't seem to be tabling it. Or if the committee, you know, prefers, instead of waiting for the department to table the bill, we can have our own bill as a committee. We table it, and, you know, that way some of the issues that you want to see happen as a committee to be addressed. Because part of the challenge is that, you know, if we keep applying for meetings on bills that are not before Parliament, chances are that the House Chairperson won't even approve, because they'll be saying that, you know, yeah, but these bills that are for you, and these things are not before you, so it shouldn't finish what we have on the first before you can apply for it. So yeah, but maybe just to add that the bill that the program that we have now is driving the way that we'll be able to analyze 2 of the bills. One of them, they protected the Steelers Amendment, was on the program. We thought we would finally do that in the next step. So we can bring that onto the program, do some of the Fridays, and also the issues around the paralegals community, because I think what we can do is just to take some of the Fridays there, we put them there, or we just move some of the issues here to Fridays, and then the other issues are the members. We put them in charge of this.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think what you will just do to redraft the program, taking into consideration the Fridays and, of course, the additional Thursday for the last week, which we will actually be doing full time. Instead of 2 bills, I'm sure we will then be in the position to take 3 bills. So we'll be in the position to get done the 3 bills that are before us, and then, of course, to then give us enough room and space. When we come back to really focus on paralegal bill, what is the situation with it, the traditional court bill, and then we were talking about Sadakai bill also. We'll look at the 3 and try and push those in the next 10, because this time we will then conclude the 3.
Sure.
I can see your hands up, Honorable Bowen.
From page 23, September, the issues around human rights. You'll appreciate the whole proha around issue. I'll appreciate if you can draw a conclusive timetable on what are we going to do
when
and what is the whole thing. I think we complete everything on the issue of the human rights.
Thank you. The point is okay, it will be done so that we know exactly when I'm going to shortlist, when we intend having interviews, and where do we intend cabling the report to Parliament. One other thing that we should actually avoid is to keep on bringing new things out of what we are talking about. Because we will talk about our business this way, but you find that along the way,
a lot is just put into this pot and they start validating the process. I feel a hand. Honorable Hunt.
Maybe the researchers will also be able to confirm, and I'm not talking on behalf of the executive, but the way I understand the position regarding the cybercrime of those that it was actually drawn by the executive at this stage.
Okay. We'll find out about that information. Thanks for the information. But also, for research, the time we may require from committee members will be for interviews. But we're waiting for that program, the time frame, that we will be advised about in the next meeting. As to, like, when is the advert going out? By when do you want to shortlist? By when do you want to interview? So that it starts making sense in terms of how the process is going to be flowing. And when do you want to table?
Actually, we have a day for the day for the email commission. I don't know if I should run through them now.
If you've got them,
yes.
you can pin them.
Okay.
So that you can give them to members and everybody will be having the information. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we are. Chairperson?
I just wanted to align myself we should not just be reactive, but proactive. Because if as a committee we feel that we need legislation on against racism, and then the department has a backlog of things they must bring to us, they are not bringing them. Why add something on their agenda? Why can't we come up with a committee bill or commission our researchers and the lawyers of parliament to do research for us on what are the possibilities on this thing. So I'm just saying, I agree that we should be proactive. But another thing is I want to propose that we do an oversight visit to the Land Claims Court, because that court is going to discredit this government and create civil strife. We need to go there, find out what is actually happening. Because we say there's triple challenge of poverty, unemployment, inequalities. You can't defeat those things unless people have access to land and natural resources. So that's a matter that we should be prioritizing as this government. So I'm proposing that we visit the court, find out what's actually happening. Thank you.
I support the suggestion, the motion that we visit the Land Claims Court. We could visit the Land Claims Court and some other institution which should be looked into by the committee secretary. And I think the program should be such that it should also include oversight. So that when we talk about oversight, we know we have time to go into oversight. Thank you. I think that brings us to the end of the discussion on the program. Can we move to the next item on the agenda? It's discussion on criminalization of racism. Do you want to make some remarks on this topic?
I touched on that. Just to say that, we are public representatives. When there is public outcry about things, we cannot found to having no clue, no ideas. At least we should be able to say, this matter is under consideration. This is the progress that we've been making. To give you an example, when we dealt with the question of paralegals, there was a conference somewhere in Natal where the deputy minister was asked to come and give closing remarks. And after that, now there is a trip to Scotland. We are invited by civil society to go and deal with the work that we should be leading on. And then So one is really saying that also when it comes to the question of racism, racism is a crime against humanity and is a crime against the people of this country, and that matter cannot take the back seat. We should be in the forefront because of dealing with that matter, because without fighting racism and defeating it, you can't implement this constitution. Now, if we can implement the constitution, where are we going? So I'm suggesting that we can't wait indefinitely for a department which is not taking heed of what we're saying. So we can start, I propose, our own internal process. We have researchers, ask them to say what are the experiences in other countries. They can come up with a discussion document, and then we start to engage with this issue. And if we find that it's necessary to take the initiative to come up with a committee decision, and then we go in that direction. So I'm not criticizing the researchers, but as Honorable Bongo said, this is a collective responsibility. They must also be able to pick up issues, draw those issues to our attention, so that we move forward. So there's no destructive criticism against anybody, but we have to be proactive to ourselves.
I can see the department liaison official wants to say something.
Thanks, Christian. Let's welcome the program. However, I think one thing that must be clear as the PLO is that we receive the program from the secretary of the committee. So matters that will be put on the agenda is because we'll respond to the invitations that we get from the secretary. The issue of the hate crimes deals the hate crimes. The department is hoping to take it to cabinet quite soon and publish it for public comment. It was busy finalizing and dealing with the criminalization part of it, and the acts and speech and the actions thereof. So that is what is on the pipeline. Traditional approach deal is also that part of the bill that there was a consultation forum that has been established, and the deputy minister is the one responsible for the administration thereof. So they are hoping to wrap up the last meeting on the 2nd this Friday. Immediately then they can take the deal to cabinet. So definitely when you come the next term, the traditional course deal is part of that legislative program, and legislative program is given to the secretary to talk about. The issue of the cyber crime bill as well, it should go quite soon. So definitely when you come back it's part in the next term, it should be part of it. Before the minimum age of criminal capacity that has been with the committee or rather with parliament table there for much. The three legislation before you has been there from February table there before yourself. So I'm saying that in appreciating the number of work that you have, you also have to appreciate the backlog and what is caused as far as the issue of elections and suppression. But all I'm saying is that we do have lots of legislation, lots of work that is before yourself, that also others are still to come. What you need to do with this program that must have timelines, clear time frames, by when and by which you want to complete this assignment. We also have correctional services, by the way, and COJ as well. It's time for annual reports that are going to come when you come back in September, so I don't know how you're going to do that. But all I'm saying is that it's not only justice, we also have correctional services that you need to entertain as far as oversights are concerned, and the department is more than willing at any time to heed to any calls when you make the call. I think the last point to mention, the Human Rights Commission, by October or September, you're not going to have a commission. Chapter 9 is just going to be dead. So it is quite important to have timelines by when you're going to finalize, as much as the advertisement might go out of the full 7 members. So that is not, it is an enormous work that you need to appraise yourself with. So it's also something that must reflect with clear time frames in this program in all these things that you need to pursue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think when it comes to criminalization of racism, I'm sure you've heard the committee's sentiment about hate crime deals. I think it's something that needs to be looked at closely. So it then talks to the expectations of the committee. But otherwise, I think a system that is actually in operation now in terms of the department making inputs
into the program of the secretary is what we really have to look at the citizen. So that, you know, there isn't any confusion as to how business comes before us. But what is most important is for both sides to take note of all the concerns the committee has actually expressed, so that nothing falls through the cracks, because for now, a lot has been falling through the cracks, and we just need to have a mechanism that actually manages to help us to move forward every time it's something on the table for discussion.
Yeah, you know, just to say that I appreciate the backlogs. You know, the committee is being accused of not performing, because there are three pieces of legislation which were brought here by March. But no mention is made of the fact that there were proposals like the traditional course which we were promised would come in October. Instead of bringing what we agreed would come in October, something else is brought, and we're being blamed for the new things that were not even agreed to. For instance, when we listen to the utterance of the Deputy Minister in conference and elsewhere on the question of racism in hate speech, it's quite clear that there is a certain approach. Why can't we get, before things go to cabinet, get internal inputs here so that we can be sure that we are all moving in the same direction? Because at the end of the day, we are the people that are accountable to the people on the ground. So someone was saying, let us be taken seriously, so that we also take our people seriously and work together. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. I think those are closing remarks. May I take the opportunity of thanking everybody for having made themselves available for this committee. The meeting is closed.